Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, April 1st. MISD will study elementary capacity problems. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. On Monday, Midland ISD board members greenlighted a demographic study that will look at its elementary schools. The hope is the district can use the findings and eliminate capacity issues on elementary campuses across the district. District leaders showed the board elementary school building utilization data at a special meeting Monday. Included in that report was that 9 schools showed snapshot enrollment that was at least 100% of the school's functional capacity, 5 are at or above 110%. Another 3 schools are 99% of their functional capacity. Quote, "What the demographic study will allow us to do is really look at the utilization of all our buildings," Midland ISD Chief Operating Officer Kelly Spencer said. Spencer added that a demographic study will allow district officials to look years down the road to determine if the campus today is going to grow and be at capacity in years to come. The overcapacity issues start with neighborhood schools on the northwest and west sides, Great House at 118%, Bush at 117%, Parker at 114%, and Scarber at 110%. They are followed by Bunch in South Midland at 109%, Faskin in Northwest Midland at 107%, Yarborough in West Midland at 106%, and South in Central Midland at 104%. The only choice school at or above 100% is Carver at 110%. It is worth noting that 3 of those schools were built using money from the 2012 bond, Faskin, Yarborough, and Bunch. 3 others have earned Texas Education Agency honors for academic performance, Carver, Bush, and South, in the last 3 or 4 years. Great House and Scarborough have been impacted by population growth in West and Northwest Midland. If possible, Midland ISD officials would then consider drawing new boundaries that move students to schools with available capacity. For instance, the following neighborhood schools have enrollment figures that are less than 85% capacity: Bonham, 82%, Lamar, 80%, Rusk, 79%, Jones, 65%, and Henderson, 50%. Jones and Henderson were mentioned Monday during a discussion about Young Women's Leadership Academy. YWLA shared a campus with Jones. A couple of board members mentioned the idea of moving Jones students off that campus to nearby Henderson. The enrollment of such a school, using 2020-2021 snapshot numbers, would be 704, which would be just less than 99% of functional capacity for Henderson. There are going to be some people who question the need for redrawing school lines. They will ask why this wasn't an issue during the 2019 bond. Remember, the bond concept takes 6th grade students who are currently on 26 of 27 elementary school campuses and would move them to junior high or middle schools. Quote, "What we know is that many of our elementary buildings are at capacity," Spencer said, "and we need to take a look at all of them so that we can eliminate some of the overage and look at it comprehensively," end quote. The functional capacity doesn't account for space created by the use of portables. Midland ISD officials said Monday there are 81 portables at campuses across the district. There are other portables being used for storage and other reasons beyond classroom activities. Officials said Midland ISD owns nearly 4/5 of the 101 portables. Mass vaccination site to take walk-ins. Midland Health reported Wednesday that walk-ins will be welcome at the mass vaccination site at the Horseshoe Complex from noon to 5 p.m. Thursday and 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Friday. Midland Health suggested those interested bring their IDs. Parents must accompany minors ages 16 and 17. Midland Health reported that it has administered nearly 50,000 vaccines at the Horseshoe alone. Midland Police Department reports drive-by shooting victim passes away. A 53-year-old Midland man died as a result of injuries that happened during a March 13th drive-by shooting in Southeast Midland. Midland Police reported that Gerardo Ramirez died Tuesday. He and a friend were leaving a residence in the 500 block of South Fort Worth Street when an unknown suspect drove by and fired multiple shots at the residence. Ramirez had remained in the hospital since March 13th because of his gunshot wound. Next of kin have been notified, and an autopsy has been requested. Midland Police Department also reported that the investigation is ongoing. Cornyn will reintroduce border security bill amid influx of migrants. The story was written by Caitlin Randall. Following a tour of the Midland County Migrant Facility on Wednesday, Senator John Cornyn said he will reintroduce the Building America's Trust Act of 2017 in the coming days, which would add Border Patrol and ICE agents and fund parts of a wall or fence. Cornyn criticized the Biden administration for, quote, putting out the welcome mat, unquote, for illegal immigration, but acknowledged that the border crisis can only be solved with bipartisan support. Quote, we need to find some way to find common ground to fix this, or at least mitigate this sea of humanity coming across our border, along with all the human misery associated with it, he said during a press conference. The $15 billion bill was first filed in August of 2017, but did not move past a second reading on the Senate floor. It would establish a National Border Security Advisory Committee, require completion of a southern border threat analysis, and provide grants for identifying victims of human smuggling, according to the bill's text. Additionally, Cornyn on Wednesday called for better technology and infrastructure at the border, a reform of asylum laws, and prioritizing asylum cases so that those whose applications are denied are quickly returned to their home countries. The senator toured the facility with County Judge Terry Johnson and Midland Mayor Patrick Payton. The official said the miners at the converted man camp southwest of city limits are well cared for and staff appeared adequately trained. Cornyn said it was, quote, completely unacceptable, unquote, for the federal government to open the facility without coordinating and communicating with local officials. Quote, but having said that, as you've heard from them, we think it's our responsibility to take care of these kids while they're here, he said. In an interview following the press conference, Payton said being placed in a migrant facility is, quote, the best thing that could have happened to these kids who are receiving meals, housing, and are being taught English along with participating in activities like soccer and martial arts. There are currently 595 boys between the ages of 15 and 17 at the facility, which has the capacity for 610 children, Payton said. Hundreds of children have been transported out of the men camp by the Office of Refugee Resettlement, and more minors were then brought in to replace them, he said. At least one of the children has been reunited with family members, according to Payton. He said that earlier this week, a family traveled from Austin to pick up a child at the gate, and staff told him the other children were cheering during the reunification.
Hello, this is Cindy, continuing to read from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Culture, for Thursday, April 1st. MSW starts renovations on Children's Museum, by J.C. Lewis. Renovations officially began this month inside the Frieda Turner Durham Children's Museum, located at the Museum of the Southwest. The reimagined space will be staffed by education professionals and serve as a welcoming focal point for families of the Permian Basin. Its open and flexible configuration provides numerous opportunities to build a learning grid of nonprofit organizations, schools, and families. The revamped 8,000-square-foot facility will allow significant expansion of the museum's high-demand arts activities and scheduled arts education programs. The open concept design creates a flexible space for a long-term, cost-effective solution. The museum can focus on evolving programs and educational equipment rather than incurring further capital construction costs. To reduce duplicative efforts and expenses, the museum will offer facilities and expertise in arts education for free or at low cost to other nonprofits and social services agencies. Museum memberships currently allow for free admission to the Juliet and Fred Turner Jr. Memorial Art Museum, Marion West and William Blanton Blakemore Planetarium, and will include the Freda Turner Durham Children's Museum. The Museum of the Southwest is accepting sponsorship donations, and naming opportunities are available. The Freda Turner Durham Children's Museum is set to reopen by 2022. Renovations include lower sensory gallery, calming environment for all ages, particularly guests with special needs. Maker space, drop-in space with staff-facilitated projects. Painting zone, paint on transparent walls, clean and repeat. Toddler zone, a space where ages 0 to 3 years can safely explore and play. Free play zone, experiment with foam blocks, ball paths, and other artistic and mechanical objects on the floor and walls. The hub space, a space where adults can recharge and chat. Seawall, enjoy and learn about aquatic life forms ordinarily found hundreds of thousands of miles from West Texas. Interactive gallery, flexible space serving as a project studio or hosting traveling interactive exhibitions. Sound garden, create music by tapping, manipulating, and moving a collection of interactive sculptures. Open concept, improvements allow for new courses and programs such as kindergarten readiness, summer camps, event rentals, and adult art classes. The Turner Mansion continues to reimagine and synchronize, by Matthew K. Ward. The archetypical American character has long been that of the individual. When Ralph Waldo Emerson, father of that uniquely American philosophy, Transcendentalism, advocated for an American style of art, he suggested it might be achieved by casting aside the shroud of the old world. Likewise, when Frank Lloyd Wright championed a modern American architecture, he asked that he not look to French Gothic nor neoclassical revivals, but to nature itself, to the landscape in which the home resides. In this sense, the American character is singular, progressive, devoted to an immediacy of time and place. However, in eclecticism, we find an equally American approach. A home designed and decorated in the eclectic manner borrows from many styles. It takes from the traditional, the ancestral, and the classical. Out of this amalgam comes something new. The harmonious marriage of styles yields a result simultaneously inventive and timeless. This alchemical impulse was perhaps best summarized by Brazilian poet Oswald de Andrade, who asked that New World artists not ignore their colonial past, but cannibalize its influence and digest it into something uniquely their own. Both approaches, the singular and the eclectic, are exemplified by the historic Turner Mansion, located at 1705 West Missouri Avenue. The story behind the building is a confluence of Americanisms. Built by an entrepreneurial oil baron, designed by an immigrant with a melting pot aesthetic, and ultimately reimagined into an institution of culture and learning. In design, the Turner Mansion is decidedly eclectic. The exterior features subtle Tudor elements, like its pitched gable roof and intricate Flemish bond brickwork. The ornate wrought iron screen set into the home's grand entryway is tempered by otherwise minimalistic exterior decoration. The interior of the building mixes modernity with austerity. The sun-drenched solarium boasts vibrant green, yellow, and blue Mexican tilework. The pink breakfast room juxtaposes a formal colonial dining room. Art Deco flares are showcased in the powder room, kitchen, and upstairs bathrooms. Each room in the home not only exhibits a different artistic approach, but encourages in its visitor a different mood, a different state of mind. In history, the home boasts some of that rugged individuality so central to an American mythology. The building's original owners, Fred and Juliet Turner, were among Midland's first great success stories. Fred Turner Jr. arrived in Midland in 1926 as a scout for Marland Oil Company. When he was released by the company the following year, Turner ventured out on his own. As a wildcatter, he discovered a vacancy of 601 acres on the lucrative Yates oil field, which was yielding 2.5 million barrels a day in 1927. When the General Land Office in Austin refuted Turner's claim to the land, asserting that there were no vacancies, he balked at its bureaucratic temerity. By 1933, Turner had won all litigation pertaining to the land and began to reap the resulting rewards. The Turner Mansion was one such reward. The family moved from their small home on North B Street into the mansion in the summer of 1937. At the time, the Midland Reporter-Telegram referred to their new residence as a show place. It was also a symbol, an affirmation, not only of the Turner Empire, but of the collectively changing fortunes of the Permian Basin. The house was designed by architect Anton F. Korn, Jr. Having immigrated from Bavaria at the turn of the 20th century, Korn possessed a rags-to-riches story not dissimilar to that of Fred. Turner, Jr., in 1913, the Manhattan architectural firm of Korn and Weatherlow declared bankruptcy, and its proprietors were on the brink of destitution. By 1916, Korn had struck out on his own and relocated to Dallas, where he began building in the Highland Park area. He made his mark on West Texas in the early 1930s, designing a number of Hilton hotels in the mode of New Mexico's Pueblo architecture. Korn's architectural style, on full display in the Turner home, emphasizes the difference between revivalism and eclecticism. The eclectic home does not cling to the past. It reimagines and synchronizes. While still maintaining the individual integrity of its various influences, the eclectic home facilitates the coexistence of its parts into a cohesive whole. This, too, ideally, is an American characteristic. You may visit the Turner home today and study its design for yourself. In July of 1968, the Museum of the Southwest relocated into the Turner Mansion. Today, the museum campus supports an eclectic collection of art, science, and historical exhibitions and programming. In 1988, the Turner Mansion was recognized as a National Historic Landmark. MSW Calendar of Events. Pre-Columbian Lifeways, on view through May 21st. Woody Crumbo, Pan-Indian Powwow, on view through April 11th. Midland Arts Association Juried Exhibition, on view April 22nd through June 27th. Sculpture Tour Garden Party, Thursday, April 29th at 5:30 p.m. for museum members only. Midland Festival Ballet announces mixed repertoire production for spring by J.C. Lewis. The Midland Festival Ballet will be presenting a mixed repertoire production, offline and on stage. The dancers will take the stage at 7:30 p.m. on April 17th at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center, accompanied by the Midland Odessa Symphony and Chorale. The performance features new works by Alice Kagi Brinkman and local choreographers Maisha Morris and Pearl Wamsley. Music by Mozart, Vivaldi, and Queen sets the mood for an exceptional night of choreography spanning multiple genres. The following works will be featured in the performance: Variations on a Theme of Argyle, choreographed by Rob Davidson, backed by popular demand. This lighthearted take on classical ballet by Davidson features fast footwork, traditional music by Mozart and surprised at every turn. Still You, choreographed by Maisha Morris, the piece shares the individual's journey in the midst of a collective walk. Baroque Lucidity, choreographed by Alice Kaye Brinkman, brings the glorious melodies of Antonio Vivaldi to life. This ballet is a celebration of the three movements of summer from his Four Seasons composition. The ballet is an escape for a time when the world needs jubilation through lively classical corps de ballet formations and innovative solo work. Keep Yourself Alive, choreographed by Pearl Wamsley. COVID-19 changed the way Wamsley heard some of her favorite songs, inspiring her to creatively process her pandemic experience. Keep Yourself Alive is a piece of full memory infused with the Pearl-style humor and hope audiences have come to know through her work. Want to go? Tickets available online at wagnernoll.com. Midland set for Texas ballpark tour, including Stop in Tall City, by David Gay. At the beginning of the band's journey, the three members of Midland came together in El Paso to record a demo, not knowing what their future held at the time. Two critically acclaimed studio albums later, as well as numerous accolades under their belt, the band has grown from that initial meeting, and Midland's goal is to create the magic of that initial beginning in person Saturday evening. The Texas Ballparks tour begins Thursday in San Antonio, continues through Midland on Friday, and ends with a stop in Amarillo. Flatland Cavalry and Haley Whittiers will join the band for the performance. The band is touring in support of the Sonic Ranch, the newly released mixed and mastered version of that first demo, as well as a new collection of music coming out in May. Because of the COVID-19 pandemic, the band, along with numerous acts all over the globe, have been prevented from sharing their craft with large crowds. The fact that the band is going to be able to perform in person means a lot to Mark Weistrack, a member of the band. Because of COVID, it's been extraordinary circumstances for everybody globally for the last year. But where there's a will, there's a way, and you always have to, I think, look at the possibilities and see what you can do to get back to some sense of normalcy while still protecting our fans and take care of everybody, he told the Globe News. We came up with this concept before the vaccines were really starting to roll out. I think we are in a really good position to turn to that sense of normalcy kind of soon. The band's new album gives listeners a look at the genesis and roots of this band, Weistrack said. When the demo was initially created, Weistrack said he felt that magic was in the recording process, something that was therapeutic to him to revisit during the mixing and mastering process. Much like a fine wine, I feel like these songs have almost improved with time. I think it's a testament to what we are chasing and essentially what was the foundation of this band, chasing the sound that is authentic and meaningful to us with lyrics that cut close to the heart, he said. Once we mixed and mastered these songs, I think we realized they were really special. The band's goal is to capture for fans that magic and the spirit of these songs and other new material that has not been released to the public yet. For individuals coming to any show on the tour, Weistrack said they should expect a plethora of both new and older, more familiar material. Fans should also expect to have quality sets from both Haley Whittiers and Flatland Cavalry, both of which are opening for Midland during the Amarillo show. I like to tour with bands that I like to watch, that I like to listen to, he said. That's what we put together with this lineup. But Weistrack said he believes it is impossible for anyone to have expectations for any of the shows on this Texas ballpark tour, with fans being a key component in the overall experience. Weistrack said he sees a communion between the band and the crowd throughout a show, affecting what the band does on stage, from how it performs a certain song to the structure of a particular set. The set lists are going to be changing. We have a lot of fans that are kind of like Grateful Deadheads. They come to every show. We also keep that in mind, he said. Every show is going to be different. It's not going to be the same set. We are not going to give the same show in San Antonio that we are going to give in Midland, that we are going to give in Amarillo. It's different every night. But one thing does not change about the band's live show night after night, and that is their goal to chase the audience's energy, as well as the soul and spirit of the songs they are performing, especially after COVID-19 prevented in-person performances. It's going to be as exciting for us up on the stage as it will be for the fans out in the audience. I think there will be that camaraderie between the crowd and the band, and kind of just being grateful that we are all here and being reminiscent of what we have been through as a community, as fellow citizens of this country and of this globe, he said. Weistrack said the concert will be an evening to reconnect with the community, reconnect with yourself, and forget about the world for a couple of hours. Especially with Amarillo being the last night on the tour, he expects it to be a little extra special. They can kind of come away and know that if they do buy a ticket, that it's special, it's meaningful. Looking at your ticket at Hodgetown Stadium in Amarillo, Texas, April 3rd, 2021, you'll know that that was unique. That was just for that night, he said. It's going to be magical. You can guarantee that. You just don't know what's going to happen. There are definitely going to be some screwballs, some curveballs, and some heaters. There will be a couple of foul balls, but definitely some home runs. Community calendar, community roundup, Easter egg extravaganza. The City of Midland Parks and Recreation Division will be hosting its 6th annual Easter egg extravaganza on Thursday. The free Easter egg hunt will take place at the MLK Junior Community Center, 2300 Butternut Lane, with 15,000 eggs. The event is open to participants 12 years and younger. The hunt will be divided into 5 age groups, 0 to 3 years old, 4 to 5 years old, 6 to 8 years old, 9 to 10 years old, and 11 to 12 years old. The Easter egg hunt will begin at 6 p.m. with the age group of 0 to 3 years old. That age group will be followed by 4 to 5, then 6 to 8, then 9 to 10, and lastly 11 to 12. Pictures with the Easter Bunny will start at 5 p.m. and are available for $5 per photo. All proceeds benefit the Midland Municipal Employee Scholarship Fund. More Easter activities. Maundy Thursday service, 7 p.m. Thursday, First Christian Church, a reenactment of the Last Supper. Easter extravaganza, a drive-through event for the family, 10:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. Saturday, First Christian Church, 10:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. Easter service, 11 a.m. Sunday, First Christian Church. Bridge lessons. Learn to play bridge. Come to Bridge in a Day, 1 to 4 p.m. April 10th, Allison Bridge Center, 913 West Wadley behind Young Life. Beginning bridge lessons, 7 to 9 p.m. Monday and 10 a.m. to noon Saturday, from April 12th through May 8th. 8 lessons for $24. Allison Bridge Center, 913 West Wadley behind Young Life. More events. Silver Spur Gun and Blade Show, April 10th through 11th. Horseshoe, CAF High Sky Wing Hops and Props, April 10th, CAF High Sky Wing Hangar, 9600 Wright Drive, highskywing.org. The Midland Walkabout Voke Sport Club will celebrate the benefits of walking for health at 8:30 a.m. on April 17th at the Allison Fine Arts Building at Midland College. Walk as much or as little as desired from 8:30 to 10:30 a.m. The event is family and pet friendly. 47th Annual Crystal Ball benefiting High Sky Children's Ranch, April 17th, Petroleum Club. Online, highsky.org/programs/crystal-ball. Midland Festival Ballet presents offline and on stage, April 17th, Wagner Knoll. Midland YMCA on course for Our Cause Golf Tournament, May 4th. Ranchland Hills Golf Club online, midlandymca.org. Email eharris@midlandymca.org. Phone 682-2551. Ask for Liz Harris Hirado. State of Midland, May 4th, Bush Convention Center. Basin PBS will host Marty Stewart and his fabulous band for a street party on May 6th. Tickets are $70. Online, basinpbs.org/community/screenings-events-ms-live. Phone 563-5728. West Texas Blowout, May 22nd. Horseshoe, Cody Johnson, June 11th, Horseshoe. Note, anyone with contributions to the Community Roundup can send them to S. Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at HearstNP.com. County leaders to enact a burn ban. Midland County will have a new burn ban in place from March 28th through June 26th, according to a report from Justin Bunch, Emergency Management Coordinator. This burn ban does have a few changes. County residents are able to burn household trash as long as they follow the listed criteria. Burning must be conducted between sunrise and 9 a.m. on the same day. It is illegal to burn at night in Texas. Sustained winds must be below 15 miles per hour. Must be household trash only. Must be contained in a barrel or other container. Cannot be in an open pit. Must be observed by a responsible adult during the entire burning process. Must have a sufficient water source within reach of the person responsible for the burning. Weather and sunrise information for the purpose of this order will be determined by the National Weather Service and can be found at weather.gov. As always, if you start a fire, you are responsible for that fire. If the fire gets out of control and causes damage to another's property, you can be found criminally and civilly liable. Make sure you follow these conditions and ensure that you're as safe as possible. Always contact the Midland Fire Department at 432-685-7340 before burning and inform them of your intention to burn. Doing this will help prevent the fire department from showing up and having to extinguish your fire. This also helps to reduce the amount of false alarm calls emergency personnel respond to. If there are questions regarding burning in Midland County, please contact the Midland County Fire Marshal's Office at 688-4160. Opinion Extra from the MRT. MISD leadership didn't make situation with YWLA worse, by Stuart Doreen. Give credit to Midland ISD leaders for turning a bad situation into a win when it came to the Young Women's Leadership Academy Phase 3 discussion during a special meeting Monday. You see, YWLA is operating out of portables, albeit nice portable buildings, during its second year of existence. It seemed like many people knew this would be the case for a while, as there was at least a four-phase plan. However, there also has been a hope to find YWLA a more permanent home. A pair of board members attempted to push that transition faster than expected, as John Truschitti III and Katie Joyner took a discussion into an unusual direction, calling for the school to take over the Jones campus and sending Jones kids looking elsewhere. No hearings, no conversations with parents, nothing. Thankfully, Midland ISD leadership, including Superintendent Angelica Ramsey, Chief Operating Officer Kelly Spencer, and the five other board members, moved the discussion in a different direction. They sided with having a conversation with the community. They said it is reasonable to put a deadline on themselves and central office to come up with a better process when faced with a difficult situation. From my point of view, they showed the faith that Ramsey, Spencer, and facility committee members can put forth a proper plan worthy of students at Jones and YWLA. There was a term thrown around Monday night that was interesting. One staff member talked about how this situation with Jones and YWLA was inherited, and indeed that was the case. There are two obvious problems that came up Monday. One, the district has one more school than campuses. The second was the planning wasn't there where it needed to be. Board members even admitted that had the bond of 2019 passed, YWLA would still have required temporary costs that the board was trying to avoid. It is a bad situation, but this board, Ramsey and Spencer, deserve credit for not making it worse. They not only bought themselves time, but will put together an elementary school boundary assessment that is needed regardless. They are erring on the side of having more information. The information they know now is that 9 schools have enrollments that are at or as much as 118% of functional capacity. They know if one adds the schools that are 99%, and there are 12, of those 10 are neighborhood schools, and 7 of those are in Northwest and Northwest Midland, high growth areas. They also know there are schools like Jones and Henderson that are 65 and 50% full compared to functional occupancy. Drawing lines are tough. What's tougher? Having to explain to parents that their children were sent to another school without discussion. I agree that the students at YWLA deserve the best situation possible, but you know what? So do the students at Jones. I'd like to think that was a factor in the discussion on Monday. Either way, MISD avoided a ready, fire, aim situation, and that's a win. They also learned there is work to be done, inherited and otherwise, and I feel comfortable saying that that can be a win, too.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, April 1st, 2021. He is risen. Photo by Jacob Ford, Odessa American. John Bushman, Center, tells the story of Christianity to students and their parents that participate in the People Pride Incorporated scholarship program during an annual Easter presentation Wednesday at Calvary Cross. The program encourages students to maintain good grades, attendance, and behavior during their elementary and secondary school educations. Those that are successful have an opportunity to receive a full scholarship to a state university. Easter message delivered at Calvary Cross by Michael Bauer, MBAUER at OAOA.com. For about 10 years now, People Pride Scholarship Program students, along with founder John Bushman, have met at the Calvary Cross for a presentation that explains the true meaning of Easter. That tradition continued again this year on Wednesday afternoon on the South Service Road of Highway 191 between Midland and Odessa. Bushman, who is also the chairman of the Investment Corporation of America and a philanthropist, spent the time during the presentation on a windy afternoon explaining to the students about the Old Testament and the importance of the Ten Commandments. All of this is to acquaint our kids and their parents with the history of the Old Testament and how God used the Old Testament as an example as to how people should live and treat their neighbors as themselves, Bushman said. God tells us to treat our neighbors as ourselves, and that's what this represents here, and the forgiveness of Jesus Christ. Numerous students attended with their parents and teachers as they gathered in front of the 40-foot-tall cross in the small park next to the highway. We put the cross in so that it could be a witness for people who drive up and down 191 and hold the two cities together, Bushman said. We always have one common thing, and that is Jesus Christ. We want it to be available for everyone, and we just did it to be good witnesses of Christianity. Bushman, who also teaches Sunday school at St. Andrew Cumberland Presbyterian Church, says that this year's message at Easter is that there's always hope. It comes through Jesus Christ, Bushman said. Anytime you get in a bind or start thinking bad things, look up and say a short prayer. The presentation also included a short story by People Pride program teacher Jamie Parks about a couple who are friends of hers found their ring in the snow at Calvary Cross after spending the afternoon at the park on February 14th at the start of the winter storm. It is such a very important time of the year with the meaning of the season and all, Parks said. When I heard that story, I wanted to share it, and with us not being able to go out much and see our parents and share time together, I'm just honored that Mr. Bushman asked me to share that story. Special music was provided by Permian graduate and UTPB freshman Damian Christian, who sung Jesus Love Me, along with the students, as well as How Great Is Our God, Amazing Grace, and Thank You, Lord. It is awesome to be out here, Christian said. Not many churches do this. It's heartwarming. Photo by Jacob Ford, Odessa American. John Bushman Center tells the story of Christianity to students and their parents that participate in the People Pride Incorporated scholarship program during an annual Easter presentation Wednesday at Calvary Cross. On the net, tinyurl.com/PJWV4PRS. 425 days. For 425 days, the city has fought a lawsuit brought by the Odessa American to enforce the state law that guarantees the public's right to see basic police records. Through January 6th, the city has spent $112,138.47 of taxpayers' dollars to fight releasing information on crime in Odessa. COVID-19 vaccines. Medical Center Hospital is administering COVID-19 first dose Pfizer vaccines from 9 a.m. to 8:30 p.m. Monday through Friday, and from 10 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. Saturday and Sunday at MCH urgent care locations at 3001 JBS Parkway and at 6030 West University Boulevard. No appointment is necessary and walk-ins are welcome. Vaccines are free of charge while supplies last. Visit mchodessa.com/coronavirus. Odessa Regional Medical Center, 520 East 6th Street, is administering COVID-19 vaccines. Vaccines are free of charge while supplies last. To check on availability or to make an appointment, call 432-582-8549. That's 432-582-8549. Or visit tinyurl.com/39J6JNSJ. ORMC will contact those who received the first dose through MCH to set their second booster shot appointment. The Ector County Health Department, 221 North Texas Avenue, is administering COVID-19 Pfizer vaccines. Vaccines are free of charge while supplies last. To schedule an appointment, call 432-498-4141, option 0. That's 432-498-4141, option 0. Visit tinyurl.com/4U6HX7N8 or tinyurl.com/2VY8DZHH. John Garcia, MD, PA, West Texas Wellness Clinic, 2453 East 11th Street, is administering COVID-19 vaccines while supplies last. To make an appointment or for more information, call 582-0300 or visit www.facebook.com/JGARCIA123. or westtexaswellness.com. Walgreens has limited COVID-19 vaccines available in select areas. To schedule an appointment or for more information, visit tinyurl.com/YHR6NE8. AJBUD or Walgreens app. AJB pharmacies are administering the COVID-19 vaccine in select areas. To sign up, updates, or information, visit vaccine.heb.com. CVS stores are administering the COVID-19 vaccine by appointment only in select stores. To schedule an appointment or for more information, visit cvs.com, CVS Pharmacy app, or call 800-746-7287. United Supermarkets are administering COVID-19 vaccines. To make an appointment, visit www.theunitedfamily.com/appointment. Walmart and Sam's Club pharmacies are administering the COVID-19 vaccine in select areas. To schedule an appointment or for more information, visit www.walmart.com/cp/122-8302 or www.samsclub.com/pharmacy or Walmart app. Additional providers, latest updates, and news may be found through the Department of State Health Services vaccine information page at dshs.texas.gov/COVID-vaccine or on covidinthebasin.com. From staff reports. Closing prices. Posted, $55.64. Futures, $59.16. Natural gas, $2.608. Benchmark U.S. fell $1.39 to $59.16 per barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. Benefit. The Odessa Downtown Lions Club held a garage sale benefit for the Leader Dogs for the Blind on Saturday. Courtesy photo. Giving back. Jersey Mike's Subs Cynthia Mendoza assembles a sandwich Wednesday at Jersey Mike's Subs in Odessa. Jersey Mike's Subs in Midland and Odessa donated 100% of their profits Wednesday to West Texas Food Bank as part of their Day of Giving fundraising campaign. Photos by Jacob Ford, Odessa American. Odessa American for Thursday, April 1st, 2021. Local News Roundup. Knit and Stitch. Illinois Art Museum, 4909 East University Boulevard, has scheduled Knit and Stitch at 6 p.m. Museum hours are noon to 5 p.m. Tuesday through Sunday and noon to 8 p.m. on Thursdays. Admission is free. Call 432-550-9696 or visit noelartmuseum.org. Good Friday events. First Baptist Church, 709 North Lee Avenue, has scheduled a Good Friday cross service at 7 p.m. Friday. Visit fbcodessa.com. Sherwood Baptist Church has scheduled a Good Friday event from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Friday at Sherwood Park North Pavilion, closest to Skate Park, corner of Dixie Boulevard and 49th Street. Hamburgers, hot dogs, chips, and drinks will be offered from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. and a message at 7 p.m. The Easter egg hunt will start at 7:30 p.m. The egg hunt will be divided into age levels. Walking ages 4 years old, first hunt, ages 5 to 2nd graders, second hunt, and 3rd through 5th graders, third hunt. A golden egg will be in each hunt for a special prize. Games set up for all kids and adults to play from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Bring your chairs. Pictures with the bunny. Legacy Harley-Davidson, 12100 West Highway 80 East, has scheduled pictures with the Easter Bunny Saturday. Pictures with the Easter Bunny from 10:30 a.m. to noon and 12:45 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. Cookies and punch will be served from 10:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. Hot dogs will be served from 11:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. There will be no egg hunt this year. However, the Easter Bunny will have a treat for all the kiddos. Visit tinyurl.com/XWTPZ2CU. OANews@OAOA.com. New Guardian Angel program exceeds expectations at MCHS. Doctors and caretakers are honored with a Doctor's Day breakfast at Medical Center Hospital Wednesday. Courtesy photo by Michael Bauer, MBAUER at OAOA.com. Vice President of Development at MCHS, Allison Pradon, wasn't sure just how much money the foundation team would raise with this year's new Guardian Angel program. So far, the numbers have been quite a surprise. The MCHS Foundation launched the Guardian Angel program in early February, and already over $2,000 has been raised. The amount has been a pleasant surprise for Pradon and MCHS. "We didn't have a set goal this year since this was the first year," Pradon said. "We were thinking like maybe $500, but we've already exceeded that, so we've been blown away. We've had 40 different doctors recognized. We've been blown away by the community." The Guardian Angel program was created as a way to recognize physicians in the Permian Basin. The program allows anyone to make a $50 donation to the MCHS Foundation in honor of a physician of their choosing. The recognized physicians then receive a Guardian Angel lapel pin on Doctor's Day, which is March 30th, signifying them as a Guardian Angel. "We wanted a way to honor our physicians and caregivers," Pradon said. "We wanted a way that not only involves the community, but also shows that we do appreciate them. We've asked our donors and community members to give a donation in honor of a caregiver that has made an impact in their lives, and they can leave a comment. We're going to give a card to all the physicians with those comments, and they'll receive a lapel pin, signifying that they've been recognized as someone's guardian angel this year. The funds raised will go to wherever it is needed around the hospital, such as equipment, anything else. And with the pandemic going on," Pradon said they wanted to find a new way to recognize their doctor's efforts at the hospital. "Our physicians and caregivers are always at the front lines, but with COVID-19, we wanted a way for our community to say thank you and also raise funds, because those funds will go back to the hospital and support life-saving equipment and any needs that we'll incur over the years. And we wanted a way to collaborate and be the bridge between the community and our physicians," Pradon said. Foundation board member at MCH, Teresa Shipke, whose husband Gregory Shipke is also the director of Basin Emergency Physicians, has described the foundation as a win-win situation. "The physicians not only get recognition, but donations also go back to the foundation, which helps the community as a whole that we support, such as equipment at the hospital or purchasing Chromebooks for schools in the area," Shipke said. "We're showing gratitude and giving back to the community as a whole through the foundation." To donate to the Guardian Angel, simply go to the MCH website at tinyurl.com/22FSEY4S. Select $50 donation, then select tribute gift and name the physician to recognize. After that, choose Guardian Angel under designation. Leave a comment describing the reason for choosing the physician as the Guardian Angel. We do have the MCH Odessa website, and you can check to make this gift in honor of someone and put the physician of your choice and leave a comment thanking them for their hard work, Pradhan said. MCHS anticipates keeping the program for next year and beyond. Starting on April 1st, we'll start holding on to them to honor our doctors next year, Pradhan said. Support the MCHS Foundation, tinyurl.com/SNX8XZU8. Lead with Literacy Fundraiser Set. OA News at OAOA.com. Permian Basin Adult Literacy Center is partnering with Literacy Texas and Away with Words to present Lead with Literacy, a virtual fundraiser event at 7 p.m. April 22nd to raise funds and awareness for adult literacy in Texas. National radio co-hosts and language experts Martha Barnett and Grant Barrett of Away with Words and Chris Boyd of KERA's call-in radio program, Think, will present Lead with Literacy. PBALC is one of 30 Texas nonprofits from every part of the state that will receive funds raised by this first-of-a-kind event, celebrating the joy of language and how the gift of literacy transforms lives, a news release said. When you select PBALC as the recipient of your ticket purchase with the virtual hashtag LeadWithLiteracy fundraiser, the $40 ticket price will be donated directly to PBALC. Choose PBALC and get your tickets for the event now at https://sforce.co/204QKOJ, or follow PBALC on social media for more information. Attendees will receive an access email on April 22nd by 5 p.m. to join the event. The goal of PBALC is to sell 300 tickets to receive $12,000 in donations. Millions of Texans are unable to read and write, and Texas ranks 47th nationwide in literacy. Literacy was one of the critical social services that tumbled during the COVID slide, and this fundraiser will provide critical support to nonprofits working with adult students across the state, the release said. Local news roundup. Police searching for man, woman involved in grocery store theft. The Odessa Police Department is looking for a man and a woman who reportedly stole merchandise from a grocery store. The reported theft happened at 9:08 p.m. January 13th at the United Supermarket, located at 1350 East 8th Street, an OPD press release stated. Investigation showed a man reportedly concealed $150 worth of merchandise while a woman acted as a lookout. The man and the woman left the scene without making any attempt to pay. OPD has released photos of the man and woman that can be seen at tinyurl.com/EPMYD2AC. Anyone with information about the theft is asked to contact Detective L. Gonzalez at 432-335-3345 or Odessa Crime Stoppers at 432-333-TIPS and reference case number 21-000908. Man charged with breaking into home to commit assault. An Odessa Police Department probable cause affidavit detailed a 46-year-old man kicked in a door to assault another man. Tommy Allred was charged with burglary of a habitation and 10 other felony, a first-degree felony. He also has a parole violation charge. The reported incident happened at 3:24 a.m. March 3rd in the 2100 block of West 6th Street, the affidavit stated. officers contacted the victim, identified as Cole Durin. Durin reportedly told officers that Allred had forcibly entered his residence by kicking in the front door in an attempt to assault him. Allred stated that he confronted Durin at his residence and forcefully entered the residence, where he and Durin fought and both sustained injuries. Allred was booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center on March 23rd, jail records show. He has one bond totaling $70,000 and was still in custody as of Wednesday afternoon. Woman, man charged in connection to parking lot shooting. A 20-year-old man and a 20-year-old woman were arrested after they reportedly shot at two people, hitting the victim's vehicle three times in the Ector County Coliseum parking lot. Avery Molinar and Damian Reyes were each charged with two counts of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, a second-degree felony. Molinar was also charged with possession of marijuana. The reported assault happened March 22nd in the 100 block of West 42nd Street when officers heard several gunshots from the Ector County Coliseum parking lot, the affidavit stated. Officers saw a gray Chrysler 300 leaving the parking lot at a high rate of speed. Officers made contact with the driver, who is identified as Blake Moya, and who reportedly detailed that his vehicle was shot. Officers saw the Chrysler 300 was shot three times in the front. Moya stated he was sitting in the driver's seat and his girlfriend, whose name was redacted as she is a juvenile, was sitting in the passenger seat when Molinar pulled out a gun and shot at them, the affidavit stated. Moya stated Molinar was the passenger of a maroon Chevrolet truck with paper plates. Moya stated Reyes was the driver and the truck belongs to Reyes. During the investigation, Reyes reportedly admitted that he was driving the maroon truck and was driving in the parking lot of the Coliseum. Reyes stated they saw Moya in the parking lot and Molinar told Reyes to stop. Reyes stated he heard gunshots and took off from the area, the affidavit stated. Reyes stated Molinar has been upset with Moya from a past incident where Moya pulled a gun on Molinar. Moya was reportedly transported to the 1700 block of Boise Drive, where he positively identified Reyes as the driver and Molinar as the passenger who shot at him. Molinar and Reyes were each transported to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. Molinar has two bonds totaling $100,000 and was still in custody as of Wednesday afternoon, jail records show. Reyes had two bonds totaling $80,000 and posted bail on March 24th. The Odessa American requested the probable cause affidavits for Reyes and Molinar from the City of Odessa on March 23rd. The City of Odessa released the information to the Odessa American on March 31st. OA News at OAOA.com.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.